I do like it, and I have no desire to go to Europe because it's a fake. It's fake. I don't care what anyone tells you, it's going to be fake.
What do
You
you
go to a
mean?
race. Yeah, for sure, man. Kyle told me he's a cool podcast, so I would really want to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, with all my racers, everyone's got a different, place where they grew up, especially the Canadians and how they got into racing. Kind of paint for us the your childhood, what it was like at home, what your dad or your parents did for a living, kind of growing up there.
So yeah, I was born 95 in San Jose, Costa Rica. I got on the first go-kart in December of 2002. That was my birthday gift. My dad took me to the track. He used to race when he was younger, only karting, no cars. As yeah, he raced in Costa Rica. He was quite good. So 2002, got my first go-kart. Never stopped ever since. I moved to the States actually December of 2003. So a year after I started, we moved to the United States. My dad bought a karting team here called Advanced Karting, and we ran that successfully for 12 years until 2015. And in 2015, my parents made the decision to go back home, back to Costa Rica. They sold the team, they sold another company that my dad owned, and got on a plane. I went with them in 2015, and then I never stopped racing go-karts here in the States.
Okay.
I've been a factory driver for a couple brands since 2012, I would say. I've been a factory driver, just different brands here and there. So I really never got off a go-kart. I got my first opportunity to do cars in Costa Rica in 2016, in TA2. So that class exists here in the States and in Australia, I believe. And they brought it to Costa Rica, and that was the first time I raced cars.
Right
That
on.
was 2016. I won the championship in 2017 and 2018. I finished second my rookie year.
What brought them to, and they moved to Miami with you guys, or that
We
area?
lived in Florida,
Okay.
so we moved all over Florida. The last 3 years was in Orlando.
And what brought them, what initiated that move?
The go-kart team.
Okay.
My parents came here, I think like June or July of 2003, and just because my dad and my mom had stores in Costa Rica, clothing stores,
Okay.
so they would come to the United States, buy some clothes, take them in their bag or whatever fit in their bag, and sell them in Costa Rica. And obviously, my dad, a motorsport guy he is, he looked for a go-kart track, and he went to Advanced Karting of Miami, called at that time. And yeah, we went there, and they wanted just to see stuff and buy things for his go-kart for Costa Rica, and my go-kart in Costa Rica. And he got on to talking with the owner, and the owner said, I'm selling. And 5 months later, we packed our bags and came here.
So when you landed, you were, I guess, 7. You started karting. Eight,
Seven.
yeah, eight. Now you're in Florida. When were you quick right away, or did it take a little bit of time?
I won the championship in my first year in Costa Rica, the 2003 championship. I won it there, so I was quick for Costa Rica standards.
Sure.
I think when I came here in the States, I was always fast, but no respect. The kids, like, who is this? I was always been, I'm a big guy. I'm 6 foot 1. I weigh 185 pounds, and but I'm a big built guy. And when I was a kid, I was fat, little chubby little kid, and come in and be fast and try to beat these kids, full Americanized. Back then, there was if there's not that much diversity in racing right now, back then there was a lot less.
Sure.
And coming, not speaking much English, being fat and fast, there was no respect at the beginning. So it took a little bit. Took probably the 2003 season to earn that respect. And then in 2004, yeah, 2004 was actually pretty good. I remember I won my first couple of national races in the kit kart and the mini class. And I finished third in the national championship in Las Vegas. So it kind of started evolutionizing it pretty quickly. Like, my dad had a karting team, and we were at a track.
Right.
So it was like I was driving 4 to 6 times a week, at least 2 hours a day. Like, I did not leave a go-kart for so many years. Over 200 laps 200, 300 laps a week. So it was like crazy how much I drove for a long, long time. So yeah, I was fast, quick, like when I first got here, but started winning maybe a year later just because of respect and people learning who I was, me learning English quickly. You know, at that age, you learn really fast English with some TV and school, you learn it pretty fast. So started learning English, started learning the karting English, and yeah, in 2005 was my first like national title in the States, and ever since, haven't stopped ever since.
Were you, I was a little chubby kid in go-karts as well. Were you ever overweight in the class?
Yeah, for sure.
That's tough.
So 2005 was my second year in Minimax. At that time, it was called Minimax. Won quite a few races, and then 2006 season, I was already about 20 pounds overweight in the Minimax. I won the first two races, but you know, when you're 10, 11, you start growing. And at that time, I was growing, but you know how we grow sometimes and look skinnier. No, I would eat so much that I would match height to weight ratio. So by the middle of 2006, I was 30 pounds overweight, 35 pounds overweight in Minimax, so I couldn't really be competitive anymore. So I started practicing in junior. I was only 10, because my birthday's so late in the year. I was born December 24th, so very late in the year. So I was only 10, and then 2007 got a waiver when I was 11 to race Junior Max. And I was racing a lot of Canadians, really good Canadians. I was racing Mikkel Grenier. I was racing David Ostella. No, Daniel Moore. I was just a little bit older than me. But a bunch of really fast Canadians were, top of in the Florida Winter Tour, which was like the biggest championship. Still is big, but like back then it was really big. Yeah, a bunch of Canadians were really fast. And I guess Kyle raced that, and I had no idea. He raced not against me, but Kyle's older than me. But he raced back then, and I had no idea, and so yeah, I had to go until I was about 15 years old. I had to move 2 years younger to every class because of my weight. I hit my peak height, let's say, when I was 15. I got to 6'1", so I was about 180, and I've been kind of been the same ever since. Different 180 back then was more of like a chubby 180, tall kid. Now it's a little bit different, more muscles, stuff like that. But I've been about 180, 185 since I was 15 until now that I'm 28. So, yeah, it's been hard.
Do you think there's like I'm hearing two factors that I think are like, where you're gonna have more competition than the average kid. One being in Florida and competing in the winter tour, where everyone, when it's winter time, comes down and competes there. And then two, I guess you're competing as a young kid against older kids basically always.
No, for sure. I think that helped a lot. Helped me mature a lot quickly. Like my first senior max season, I was 14, racing against like top guys, factory drivers that were racing at that time. I was only 14, right? So I went into the deep end, and like I said, I've always been quick, but in anything, it takes a while to earn respect. So same thing, I was 14. I won the first two races. In the third race, they weren't going to let me win. It is what it is, So yeah, I think it helped a lot being a fat, chubby kid, because it did help me learn a lot quicker than I was supposed to. And of course, living in Florida at that time, we had five, six tracks. Now there's maybe two or three, but at that time, you had so many tracks you could go drive at. And again, my dad's shop always was at a racetrack, so I used to get so much seat time. It wasn't even funny. Like people say, "Oh, I drive a lot." I'm like, "No, you don't." Like, I drove a lot back then, every Tuesday, every Wednesday, every Friday, every Saturday, every single week of every single year. That's all we did. My dad had a team, right? We have customers that want to go on Tuesday. So I'm like, "Dad, I'm going." He's like, "Okay, just put some fuel, some old tires, and go drive." It doesn't matter if you're fast or not. It was just getting that seat time, that is so crucial. Something that's so different in car racing, that you don't get seat time. It's something that, I started in IMSA in 2021 full time with Kyle, and it is still, it's still to this point to me, he's like, "Oh my God, like I can show up to the track at 7, drive at 10, and then drive at five again. Like, what is this? You know, it's like
Yeah.
I'm very outgoing. I'm a very flat out person. And this 7 hour wait between sessions, it's just like I want to like go do something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's something that I'm very grateful for my parents and the opportunities I got as a young kid.
For sure. For people who don't know, you're talking about Kyle Merselli, your teammate now. But so going back to, you're on this trajectory. You're obviously competing at the top level in karting in North America anyways. Does when your parents say, "Okay, we're moving back to Costa Rica," how did that go over for you, and how did you conceptualize your career going back home?
So to be honest, I have gave up on the racing dream, of course. My parents never had enough money to give me that bump start. So I wasn't doing any cars at all in 2015. I was just doing go-karts, you know. Again, luckily getting everything paid for to do go-karts, but that's all I was doing. So it didn't really change much if I lived in Costa Rica or in the United States, because a flight from Costa Rica to Florida is 2 hours and it's $350. It's not a big deal. The team doesn't care either, because at that point of my career, I wasn't driving that much. I was just doing races, showing up Wednesday or Tuesday before the race and driving that. So it didn't really affect me too much. And that big break came in 2016 in Costa Rica. Like, if I didn't live in Costa Rica, that wouldn't have happened, right? Which was to race TA2. I don't think that had effect in my career here in the United States, because it didn't really matter. What actually mattered was my karting career. I got chosen to, I got asked to help run a team, a new team, in 2019 called ANSA Motorsports. And I am forever grateful for my one of my close friends that recently passed away, Patrick Otto Mattson. He's the one that called me and said, "Danny, come. I want you to help me run my karting team, and you'll have potential tests in cars," because that they have a karting side and a car side. So I was like, "Of course." You know, we came with a number, and I moved back. I moved back in 2019 back to the United States by myself, and to run this team, and you know, to do some testing in cars when available. So if I moved to Costa Rica or didn't move to Costa Rica, I don't think it changed much in those 4 years of my life. You know, a lot of things happen in
Sure.
Costa Rica, personal things, but like racing things, like the racing side of things. If I lived here in 2015 to 2019 or lived in Costa Rica, I don't think it changed anything.
Okay.
So in that part, I don't think it affected me too much.
Now, you're a great guy to ask this question. I had Hinchcliffe on the podcast up here a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about that crucial jump from karts to cars, and how some guys are, crazy quick in a go-kart, and it for whatever reason it just doesn't work. Or guys are, fifth to 10th place guy in a go-kart, and like Villeneuve, the faster car he drove, the better he got. How was that jump for you? Was it a big adjustment?
To be honest, no.
Okay.
It was very, very easy. I've been driving the peak of karting for a long time, which is the KZ class. It's so fast, it's so physical. So whenever I jump in any car, at least to this point, it feels slow. It
Right.
was like this is slow.
Yeah.
I have so much time to think. I have so much time in the brake zone. I'm like, this lap I'm gonna try braking at the three. This time I'm gonna brake at the two. This time I'm gonna brake at the four. In go-karts, you don't have time to think. It takes so much longer to be able to slow down your mind in a go-kart than it does in a car. So luckily the jump wasn't big. On the speed side
Sure.
of things. On the other side of things, have an engineer make the decisions for you in a go-kart that doesn't exist. I make the decisions, I tell my mechanic, we do it together. In the car, I say the car's doing this, and I have to have 100% trust in my engineer that, he's gonna do what it's gonna fix the car. So that thing, that's been really hard for me to adjust. I think I have a really good balance right now. I think learning from Kyle for what he's been doing it for so much longer, what I brought into the table and what he brought into the table, and we mixed it together, and it's been really, really good. WTR Andretti, obviously the team that I've been for since I started my career in IMSA, has been extremely helpful too. They listen to me quite a bit. They let me in a lot of things that some other teams maybe won't let me in. What I mean by that is I know a lot about the setup of the car and the feeling of it with my butt is it feels like I'm pretty good with it, and they're really open with me. And I think that's been one of the major parts of our success is that they're really open with me, I'm really open with them, and together we create a very good setup, especially in the Lamborghini Super Trofeo. Kyle and I and the engineers created a beast, a monster the last 2 years. It's just been, a car that drives itself pretty much. So it's been incredible. I think that's been the biggest switch. I think just the engineering side of things, the things that have to go on, there's a little bit more, let's say you have to be a little more methodical with procedures, stuff like this, that in karting is you put your helmet on, go drive, come in, do the changes, go back out and drive an hour later, So that's the biggest difference in my opinion.
Right. Going back to the karting, you're obviously competing at the highest level in the States. You're winning a whole ton of races. Do you have this desire to say, "Hey, I want to go race in Europe and see where I stack up in the world?" Or did you go to the worlds for Rotax stuff ever? Like, did you get to compete against everyone at certain
Yeah,
points?
I did. I did. I qualified pole twice at the World Finals in Rotax. I finished fourth my first time ever in 2010. I led 19 of 20 laps in Brazil in 2018. Lost it in the last lap. Don't even go there because I don't like talking about that race. But yes, I do like it, and I have no desire to go to Europe because it's a fake. It's fake. I don't care what anyone tells you, it's going to be fake.
What
You
do you
go to a
mean?
racetrack that it's 1 point, you go to a racetrack that they have 12 million laps at, every single team, every single go-kart, every single manufacturer, and you try to beat them with 2 days of driving. Yeah, you're not going to beat them. It's impossible.
Right.
That's why the World Finals is super nats. Super nats, temporary circuit. Everyone gets there Monday morning. The track gets built Monday morning. Everyone gets to see the track for the first time Tuesday afternoon. You get five practice sessions straight to qualifying. Everyone goes there. There was 82 in KZ last year. That's the world championship to me. That's a real world championship to me. I don't care if it's not FIA. I don't really care. The French people, whatever they want to be called, FIA, I don't care. I don't really care about the FIA CIK World Championship. I don't care because it's fake. Again, there's teams testing already for a race that's in September. They're already testing in Portugal. Like, come on. That's not affordable. That's not a way to do it. That's not a real world championship, in my opinion, just because you have so much more advantage of as you live in Europe. Like, let's say the Brazilians, let's say the Argentinians, they're great drivers. And if they go race against them, they're going to get destroyed
Yep.
because they live in Argentina. It takes 15 hours to get to Portugal for a 2 day test, while these guys could be doing it, once a weekend. In Europe, it's pretty easy to travel. It's like in the United States. So, no, I really don't care about going to Europe. I think Supernats, even Rock the Rio, just Vegas races, temporary circuits, when you have factory people coming, like Supernats last year, we had over 20 factory drivers, drivers that make a living off doing this. They come to that race. So there is no difference. They bring the best equipment they can. They bring their engine builders. They bring everyone. They bring two go-karts, four engines. Like, it's for me the pinnacle of to test out yourself. And why? Because you get three practice sessions and then you go racing. There is no testing. There is nothing you could test, So that's why, in my opinion, and it's not because I've won this race. I don't care if I won this race. I think it's the most fair set of races that you could do because of the temporary circuit,
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I love street courses, temporary circuits, and for that exact reason, because no one can test, and it's
Exactly.
such a big
That's the
difference.
best part. Like, for sure. For sure. That is the my favorite part about those races is you get no testing done. You show up. And it's not even hard. It's hard for me, but imagine for the mechanics and engine builders too. They're seeing the first, carburation, the gearing, what timing you put, how tight you put the squish, how low you put the cylinder. There's so much variables in go-karts people don't understand that go into making a perfect package. And they only get three practice sessions and you go into qualifying. And in Supernats, the craziest thing is what you qualify, you start every heat. So you qualify bad, it's a difficult thing to make yourself wait forward. And in most races, there's three heat races, a pre-final, and then a final. There's so many classes, so many drivers that they can't put a pre-final at Supernats.
Oh.
So after the heats, straight to the final. So it's very difficult to exhume everything out of your go-kart in so limited time. And the track evolution is like F1, like
Sure.
when they go to the street circuit. It's from Thursday to Sunday, it's 5 seconds. So it's like what maybe worked on Thursday doesn't work on Sunday. So it's like a constant battle of evolution of what gear, what did this, what tire pressure, what to do with the engine, what to do with this. The driving style changes, when it's really low grip, you have to drive this way, when it's higher grip. So for me, that's my world championship. That is the only reason I have zero interest in going to Europe to race.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I've never heard anyone explain that to me before, and I did like I assumed that those teams were doing a bunch of testing, but I didn't realize, the extent that yeah, you can't just show up there and think you're going to compete against someone who's
It's impossible.
extracted every last hundredth out of the cart.
Exactly. And we're not talking about, novices. We're talking about, the class I would do with KZ, you're talking about the 35 guys that do the same I do. We live doing this. We pay our rent. We have a family because of racing. They're doing the same thing by karting with around those racetracks. Like, you're not going to go beat them with 2 days of driving. You're delusional if you think you can.
No, absolutely. Before we jump into the your break and the racing the car racing stuff, I don't think many people understand how rare it is, even more so than being a race car driver, how rare it is to be a professional go-kart racer. How many guys in the world are seriously making a living racing?
In the United States, I would say maybe three in the United States. It's me, my teammate Ryan Norberg, another great driver. He does the tag classes, not the shifter classes, and actually make money. Maybe just us two. I'm not sure. I don't want to say that there isn't more. There
Sure,
could be more.
sure.
I know there's a lot of people that race for free,
Yep,
that the team brings it, but like to make a living off of it, I don't know who else. In Europe, like I said, I think there's 20 guys that make it in Europe, 15 guys. And this is, I'm talking about, living just to race go-karts. So yeah, it's I feel blessed and then I feel even more blessed that my racing team, my car team, is still okay with me doing this.
Right.
And the day they say no, it's the day I stop. But as of right now, if there's no conflicts, if there's no putting my body in danger, which there's always danger in racing go-karts, and there's always dangers of going on a bike ride, like David Malukas went on a bike ride, broke his wrist.
Yep.
Now he has it, that's what I'm saying. So there's always risks in any sport, in any training, even in the treadmill. You
Yeah.
trip in the treadmill, you break your ankle, you can't race. So it's, managing those risks. But yeah, I feel blessed, and I'm so grateful for my team, Rollison Performance Group, who I race for. Mike Rollison hired me middle of 2022. And ever since, it's been an incredible partnership, and we've won a lot of big races together so far.
That's good. That's good. So that you move back to Miami or you move back to Florida and you said, okay, you're setting up this kart team and you get some opportunities to test. What are the opportunities to test in?
Okay, so the first one was that December that I came to sign my contract. There was They were getting ready for the Roar in LMP3. I've never even seen an LMP3. I have no idea what that is, right? Obviously, I'm like cool prototype car, and my boss at that time, who was Patrick, with his partner, who was Elaine. There's two partners in ANSA, Patrick and Elaine. They were had a two day test in Daytona, and for their P3s, they were racing the Michelin Endurance Cup. No, they're doing the. It was like a series before, like, they don't race anymore, which is only P3s. I forgot the name of it. But anyways, they're like, we have to go to do some shakedowns. And they hired a pro driver called Scott Andrews. Great guys, great friend of mine. And they hired him just to see where the car was. So Patrick asked Elaine, hey, can Danny do the shakedown of all the cars? So just 2 laps at around Daytona, do the shakedown, make sure they're okay, give them to Scott to keep testing. And he's like, yeah, there's no problem. So I was all fired up to go do, 4 laps in 2 days. And we get there, everything's good, chills going through the tunnel first time, driving. And
Yeah.
I get in the car and I go out and leave the pits, go through turn three, and the rear locks. And the car, like the rear calipers completely locked, like while I was going 5 miles an hour. So the car, is in the middle of the track. I'm like, well, that's great luck. So they bring that car in, and it was a bigger issue than just the calipers locking. So obviously, I go out in the other car, do 2 laps, everything's okay. And they start their testing program. So the one of the cars is out. They're trying to fix it. They don't fix it day one. So day two starts, they fix it. I go out, do 2 laps, car's okay. The customer's driving with him, with Scott. They're getting a baseline out of it. And kind of at the end of the day, Scott puts a set of new tires, does a benchmark, I think a 44.0, 43.9 was really good lap time. Well, compared to the pole the year before, I think he was 2 tenths faster. So the team was super happy. And they're like, Danny, do you want to drive? Like, we're done testing. And I'm like, shakedown? No. Do you want to go drive Scott's car? So I'm like, yeah, of course. So, this is my first time pushing the car, never driven a P3. And, my first lap, I think, was like 147. He did 43.9. So I'm like, man, I can't suck this much. Second lap was like a 46 flat. So getting closer. Third lap was a 45.1. So I'm like, a second a lap. So I'm like, okay, I'm a second off a pro guy. And I get the checker flag. And I'm like, dude, there's no way I'm only doing 3 laps.
Yeah.
And I kept it pinned. I kept it pinned and I kept on going, finished the lap, and I did 44.1. So it was, 2 tenths off Scott. And obviously, everyone was pissed. Not the team, but the organization. I did an extra lap on the checkered flag. I was like, this is my chance. I don't care. And freaked out when I saw my lap time, got on the radio. I'm like, holy cow, guys, thank you so much. I was like cheering up. And I remember coming in, and the engineers barely knew me, barely paid attention to me. I was just the guy making sure the cars were okay. And both engineers, hi, my name is, Jeff, and my name is, this. And I'm like, oh, nice to meet you guys. Like, and it kind of kickstarted there that I was so close to Scott with only doing 5 laps in that car. But that was in December. That was 2019 December. Went back home, back to Costa Rica, signed the contract with them. Started in January, no cars. I did a couple shakedowns of a Ferrari in Palm Beach, a couple shakedowns of an Audi R8, GT3, that for a customer, mostly customer cars that they need to shake down to make sure they're okay after they got serviced. No push sessions at all and anything. And in June, I was in a karting race in Indy at Newcastle in the Scusa Championship. And it was, I think, on Thursday. And I got a call from my boss. He wasn't there. And he's like, hey, do you want to race a Lambo at Virginia next week? I'm like, are you prank calling me? Or,
Yeah.
and he's like, no, do you want to race with me? Like, I was going to race pro am, him at the am, and me as the pro. And I'm like, of course I want to race. Okay, well, you need to get your license. So in IMSA, it doesn't take it 2 days to get your license. It's complicated and expensive. And I call my parents freaking out. It's like, guys, everything you have saved up, whatever you need, I need this license now. So my mom and my dad are doing all the impact tests and helping me do this and helping me do that. And I'm like, I'm racing go-karts. I'm like, I don't have time like to think about all this stuff. And every night at 5, I would call my dad, and my mom's like, what's going on? What do you need? And they're working with my FIA, the ASN of Costa Rica, to try to get everything, all the paperwork and everything. And the week after was Virginia. And yeah, I got my shot at racing in IMSA at VIR. Never been to IMSA, never driven a Lambo either. That was the first time both. And decent Lambos, they're known for being have so much torque that it makes the rear nut of the car come off.
Oh, wow.
Even though they're tight, like you have to have like a special way to do it because they have so much power, they have 650 horsepower,
Wow.
that they break them, like they just make the nut come loose. So we go to Virginia. I did a bunch of laps of the sim in 2 days, whatever I had between races. And I spent, I think, 5, 6 hours each day on the sim just learning the track because I had no idea. And Virginia is not an easy track. And it's
No,
a,
no.
sorry for the word, ballsy track,
Oh, yeah.
very blind, very fast. And especially in these Super Trofeos, you're going 170 miles an hour going up the S's. And yeah, I got there and go out and lap two, I'm like, and something like felt weird in the rear of the car. I'm like, the hell? And they're like, oh, come in, come in. You lost the tire. You lost the tire. So the rear tire came off, and then I dragged them into the pits. We lost practice one. So there goes practice one. Full downpour practice two. So no practice whatsoever. And then I got really lucky that my team boss, not Elaine, but Patrick, who I was sharing the car, is like, I'm not racing. I did 2 laps. You did 1 lap. We have no testing, so I'll let you run alone. And my first lap was qualifying, and there was a red flag lap two. So it was just like, Jesus, everything that could go wrong went wrong. And then let's say my first push lap was in race one. I think I started second to last, came up to fifth. So it was pretty good. At the end of the race, I had good pace. And then race two, again, started last, and I finished fourth, second in class. So the pace was there surprisingly quickly. And then because of that, the team saw, like, okay, the next race, we're going to race again. And Danny, you're in already, like, confirmed. So we went to Laguna Seca. And then Laguna Seca, I could have probably 6.5 million laps around Gran Turismo, Forza, iRacing. It's just a track that everyone knows. So I showed up, and we were fast. We were really fast, both team cars. And I qualified second overall for race one and third overall for race two. So we had great pace there. And in race one, I made a mistake. In IMSA, there's a rule that's only in IMSA that when green flag drops, you can't move. You have to stay in your lane until you cross the line.
Okay.
IMSA is the only series in the world that has that. Normally, it's green flag means racing, and I did that. I was starting second, and as soon as it went green, I almost hit the door of the first place. Obviously, I'm trying to. It was like a karting start. It went green. I went down the inside as hard as I
Yeah.
could, and I got a drive through. So, kind of screwed by race one. But race two, I won in class, and I finished fourth overall. Great pace, and my engineer at that time had left. He left right before Laguna, and he left to Wayne Taylor Racing. That's the same engineer that also introduced himself after my test at Daytona in the P3.
Got it.
He worked with ANSA. He got hired at WTR. And the last race of that year was the COVID Sebring in November. I don't know if you remember that, because of COVID that year, they moved Sebring, the 12-hour, to December, to November.
Right.
Because Florida was the only state, well, place, only place in the world that
Was free.
we didn't really care. We didn't care about COVID, and I think we were right. I think we saw that Florida was the only place that was right in the world.
I think Sweden was okay
But
too. I think I don't think they locked down.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly, and they're doing great. So went to Sebring and qualified pole both days, and got disqualified for qualifying one and two because it was back to back. So I had to start last both races because it was 1 millimeter too low, the front of the car.
Right.
So started last, and then race one was making my way in lap two, went through 17, de-beaded the left rear because of the
Oh,
bumps,
yeah.
and got really lucky, didn't put it on the wall, saved it. And then race two came from last to win in class and finish fourth overall.
Wow.
And yeah, that was a very good race for me. The pace was, faster than the leaders. It was my third race ever racing in the United States, and I got a phone call from my ex-engineer. He's like, "Hey, you have a ride for next year?" I'm like, "No, not yet." And he's like, "Do you want to race with WTR?" And
Wow.
I was like, "Are you serious, right? Are you joking?" And he's like, "No, my the you know Travis Ho, who is the the manager, the general manager of WTR, wants to have a meeting with you at Sebring. They're testing the big car. Would you want to, do you want to come drive up? This was maybe a week after or 2 weeks after the race in Sebring. And I was like, of course.
Yeah.
Like, of course, I need to go. And yeah, you know, the first contract, you know, we sat down and he's like, do you have any budget? I'm like, no, I have zero money. I got no money whatsoever. You know, I got very lucky with ANSA. I worked for them. You know, no. And he's like, okay, well, I really like you. I think you're new. I like your attitude. And let's see what we can do. I can't guarantee you, but you're in a good spot. I'm like, okay, cool. Thank you. And that was November, almost December. It took almost a month and a half. And then he's like, do you know Kyle Marcelli? I'm like, no idea who that is. At that point, I didn't really follow much of sports car. And that's honest.
Sure.
I didn't follow much sports car. I followed F1, IndyCar, but not so much sports car racing. And I didn't know who Kyle was. And he's like, well, he's also in the run for the seat. And I'm like, okay, cool. No problem. And then about a week later, got a phone call from Travis saying, it's going to be you and Kyle. And I'm like, oh, amazing. Our first test is in Coda in 2 weeks. I'm like, okay, perfect. And I remember like it was yesterday. It was pouring down rain at Coda. And our call time was like 5:30 in the morning. It was so early. And I showed up like, I'm an early guy. I always show up early. Like 5:15, I showed up. And I'm in my car because no one's there yet. And another car comes, parks next to me at 5:28, get out of the car. And this skinny, scrawny, long-haired, because he had long hair from COVID. He hadn't cut his hair in a year, with a beard, comes out of the car. I'm like, who is this kid? And he's like, hi, I'm Kyle. I'm like, oh, how you doing? I'm your teammate. I'm Danny. And that's how we met. We didn't have a phone call. We had nothing in you know, he had those kind of, he was like the guy that like looked at me on Instagram. I went on my story and I saw he looked at my Instagram and I went on his Instagram, but we didn't follow each other because we didn't want to be the first one to be, okay, I'm going to follow you, you know? I saw that he was so different to me in so many aspects. Like everyone that's listening, Kyle is the calmest guy you'll ever meet in your life. Doesn't show much emotion, crazy fast, but like super calm. When he does a good lap, he's like, guys, I think that was a good lap, you know, super relaxed. I am complete opposite. he likes radio silence when he drives. I am like talking to my engineer about a minute each lap, every single lap, asking questions, laughing about it. I am full, like flat out all the time, fired up all the time. And so I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. You know, he might get annoyed of me and I might get annoyed of him not talking back to me. And I think it was a perfect combination because since then, Kyle's definitely been up a little more flat out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm a little bit more calm.
Right.
So it's been a very good relationship and it sucks that we can't race Super Trofeo again this year together.
So explain that series for people who don't know what the Super
yep.
Trofeo series is. And was that with Wayne Taylor Racing as well?
Yes. Okay. Every time in 2021, okay. Since 2021, I've been with Wayne Taylor Racing.
Okay.
And Kyle too. Super Trofeo is pretty much a cheaper version of a GT3, much faster.
Okay.
It has 120 more horsepower than a GTD because it's not restricted because all the cars are the same in the series.
Right.
A little bit less downforce. So it's very fast in a straight line.
So they're all Lamborghinis and they're all, what car is it? The
Huracan.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Huracan. Yep, it's a Huracan. It's a very similar engine package to the GTD, just the GTD is so compromised to make the BOP standards for IMSA that this car is just a monster. Like again, single mix series, everyone's in the same car, very little what you could do to the car. And it's 2 50-minute races during the weekend with a pit stop anywhere from 20 minutes to 30 minutes in the race. And yeah, two qualifying sessions. So each driver gets to qualify. Whoever starts one race ends the other. So yeah, pretty basic series. And yeah, Kyle and I won the 2022 and 2023 season together. Right now, me and him are tied in all-time wins in the Lamborghini North America Championship. Obviously, if I get a win now, I'll be the record breaker because he's not racing this season. Yeah, it's been weird. Me and him talked about it after Sebring. We kind of just like chilled for like 2 minutes, talked over the big race, and said how we missed each other because we were racing together and we were there the whole week together, but we weren't together. Like, you know, we weren't going to lunch together. We weren't doing this together. We weren't doing the data together just because how the time I was racing both, right? I raced the IMSA WeatherTech and the Lamborghini Super Trofeo race at Sebring. So I was super busy going back and forth. I don't know if you guys saw the video, but it was over 0.88 of a mile. The grid from one side to the other was almost a mile long.
Wow.
Of trailers. And our Super Trofeo was exactly at one end and our GTD was exactly at the other. So it was a 10-minute walk minimum every time you wanted to do it. So we had been golf carts, do this, do lunch. Then he was eating lunch somewhere else. I was eating lunch at Lamborghini. So it was different. It was different for Colin and I. We both kind of looked at each other like, damn, we miss each other. You know, it's been 3 years of doing everything together. And this first race that was double duty that we were separated, it definitely, it felt different, you know?
Right, right. And you guys dominated, what, last year in the Super Trofeo Series? How many races did you guys win?
We won 10 out of 12 last year. Yeah, it was awesome. And then the other two was won by the sister car.
Okay.
Yeah, we definitely had the sweet spot on that car last year. And in 2022, we won 5 out of 12, which was also a great year. The worst position we finished was 4th in 2022.
Right.
So yeah, the last two seasons have been really, really good.
So going back to your first year, you get that, you know, you sit down, you wait a month, you get the contract, okay, you get the drive. I'm assuming they're not paying you or they're not paying you a whole ton at that point. You get to drive a race car.
Zero.
Right.
Just like those Carters that do it, just, you know, I showed up with a suit and that's it.
Right.
You know.
And as your sports car you know, endeavor progresses, your sports car career progresses, are you looking more and more like, hey, I need to start making a living racing sports cars?
This is the first year I'm making a living of racing fully sports cars and not karting.
Right.
So this year, luckily, and thank God and thank everyone that's, you know, helped me get to this spot, I'm making a living of karting and cars. And yeah, it's a dream come true. I'm doing what I love every single weekend. This is the first week I have off since the year started.
Wow.
Because of how many go-kart races I did this year and how many car races and tests we had. This is since I got back from Sebring on Monday. Since Monday till today, I've done nothing but my spin bike and eaten food. I've probably gained 10 pounds. I don't care. I'll lose it again. Because I've been flat out like for 3 months. And it's a blessing. And I hate saying, oh, feel bad. I don't care. I'm not asking anyone to feel bad for me. It's a dream, and this is what I love. But your body gets to a point that, like, oh, dude, you need to chill just a little bit. And I decided this week was that chill week. You know, I did those coaching days, which are super relaxed. You know, I'm not doing anything. I'm not driving.
Yep.
I'm just helping somebody get better. But yeah, it's been crazy. This is the most I've raced go-karts in the last decade, and the most I've raced in cars ever. So it's like, it's been sick offseason, like, let's say winter for me.
Right. That's good. Do you, I was going to ask, I guess, what was your secret to losing weight and getting fit? Was it a mindset change?
To be honest, having the liberty of eating whatever I want, when I want. And when I say that is I do intermittent fasting. I train hard. So, for you, those viewers that don't know what intermittent fasting is, it goes a big period of time without eating any food, just drinking water or consuming things with no calories, black coffee, tea, stuff like that. I've been doing it for a long time now. I've been doing 16-8 for a long time. So 16 hours fasted, 8 hours eating. And then the last 3 months, I've switched to 22 hours fasting. And since I've been doing that, I've noticed a big change of feeling, sleep, and also how much more junk food I can eat, let's say, without gaining any weight or actually losing weight. Because again, you're fasting for 22 hours. You really have to mess up to eat in those 2 hours remaining. You really have to mess up what you're eating to go over, 2,000 calories or 2,200 calories. My maintenance calories, I think it's 2,400. So my body burns a lot of calories without doing much. So let's say I eat 2,600 calories in one meal. Dude, I need a messed up hardcore. Plus, that doesn't include the calories I burn, doing an hour spin bike that I do every single day. So that's been really good to me. This week I've been kind of up and down. I've only fasted about twice this week. The rest of the week I've just, been chilling. When I get hungry, I eat. But I've been doing that, and when I lost all my weight from 2000, when I was 14 to I was like, I really lost my weight that I started, like, let's say, looking fit at a 180, not fat, was when I was about 18, 17 years old. And I went from maybe 17% body fat to 12% body fat, which is what I normally am, about 12 to 10. 10 is my lowest when I'm like full go-kart because of the weight and karting. Sometimes I have to be like 176, 175. That's like the leanest I like I am, and I don't feel great. Like, as anyone knows, when you lo lose too much body fat and you do it too fast, your body doesn't like it. And I love eating, man. I love food. I love pasta. I love pizza. I know. And I love working out. So, it's been really good since I've been, I'm 28 now. It's been a little bit harder to lose the weight as you get older. Maybe since when I was 17, 18, I could lose it a lot quicker. I'm still lose it fast, but not as quick. But yeah, it was a mindset. So like you just said, just have a balance. Not every meal has to be a shit meal. Sorry for
No,
the
you're
word.
fine. You're fine.
Try to get protein in at least, 150 to 180 grams of protein, in that meal. So it's a lot. Like when I eat dinner, like today, for example, my last meal was at 4 o'clock last night. So I took some venison. I don't know. People don't know what venison is. It's deer, ground deer. So ground
Yeah,
beef,
that's what I
deer.
eat almost
And
every day.
I love it. It tastes so good and so lean and so good for you. And it's a pound, and I'll eat the whole pound.
Yep,
That
same.
I'll eat the whole thing. I'll eat the whole thing just because that's my only meal, right? So, and that's only, if I'm not mistaken, 600 calories.
Exactly, yeah.
There's something, it's something crazy with like 100 grams of protein.
Yep.
And I'll eat that, and then eat some pasta that has maybe 15 grams of protein with some carbs. And then if I'm full, that's it. If I get a little bit hungry, sometimes I'll eat, two pieces of cheese. So it's pretty much a keto diet, let's say, almost, because I'm eating definitely more protein than carbs. But again, I just eat what I want. And if I want some gummy bears, because that's my go-to when I'm like wanting some sugar, that's what I eat. Some gummy bears, some Mike and Ikes, and I'll eat those. So again, my total calorie is going to be 1,500 calories tops. Yeah, it's not the greatest calories sometimes when you eat, sugar, but at the end of the day, it's been working really well for me. Obviously, doing race day, it changes up a little bit because you need those carbohydrates, you need those sugars before you drive a car, and burn crazy amounts of water, because that's what you do in race cars and cars especially. You burn so much water that you lose a lot of electrolytes. So you need some sodium, you need some carbs to help you stay alive, because people don't understand. Well, some people don't know, but when you start sweating, the last thing you lose is the protein. So like you lose your water, you lose your sodium, you lose your sugar, you lose your carbs, then you start losing some fat and protein. So when you eat fat and protein right before going to sweating crazy amounts, that's the last thing you burn. So if you don't consume any sugar or sodium before that, it's like your body goes through everything extremely quickly. So, yeah, race day changes a little bit, especially our boy Kyle. He went to do a physical test, and great shape. He's in great shape, But out of everyone that school's ever tested, over 200 drivers, you know, he is top 0.1%. So like the highest burner of salt in like their history.
Wow.
So a normal person burns like a high sweater burns 1200 milligrams of sweat, let's say. That's what they burn.
Yep,
right?
Yep.
Sodium, so in the race, yep, I burned 600.
Okay.
So I was very low. My other teammate burned 800. Kyle burned 8,800.
Oh my goodness. What did he do? 8,000. What the
8,000.
Heck?
8,000. So like so
you must have an IV of sodium.
In the race, Kyle had to have a special blend of salt in the water. So I got in after him. Holy cow, I couldn't drink water. I didn't drink water. I swear to God, I didn't drink water for that whole stint because it was the most disgusting tasting thing. It was like opening your mouth in the ocean for 10 minutes. It was something I've never experienced. I came out of the car, I'm like, dude, because of you, I'm dehydrated.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, he's like, dude, your water is salt. That's not even water. So it was really funny that I'm really glad that we found that from Kyle though, because one of the races last year, he lost so much water because it was so hot, but it wasn't the water that was killing him. It was that he lost so much sodium and he started cramping up. So I'm really glad that he found that because, you know, he's not out of shape. He just runs out of sodium. Mm. And when you run out of sodium in your body, you start cramping up, your muscles start spasming, and your brain's like, stop. So, yeah, he is a salty, salty dude.
Man, that's funny. Yeah, I don't think people, you know, even go-karters, but I don't think people realize just like what you're battling in a race car, obviously, is the, you know, staying strong mentally, but it's the heat. It's so much the heat there.
So
and
hot.
You have to.
It's so hot.
Like I say to anyone, like, okay, you know, you've got in a sauna before, and now do, you know, a 50 or an hour in a sauna. And try
or
and
two.
Yeah,
or
two.
Double.
Or two, yeah. Yeah. And then
yeah.
Like you know you stay in a sauna too long and you start to panic a little bit and
oh for
just
sure.
Like that.
For sure. And now imagine with a helmet, a balaclava, a suit, a shoes, and driving and having prototypes pass you and having to pass guys in front of you and tire wear, and it's crazy. And I train in the sauna 3 or 4 times a week. I train by that, I stretch and do some abs 15-20 minutes in a sauna.
Yep.
I got really lucky that the LA Fitness that's close by me, my gym, the sauna goes up to 200
Ooh,
Fahrenheit.
That's good.
I've never seen one that hot. That one's unbearable. Like it's hard even to breathe. Like our cars don't get to 200. They get to about 160,
yep.
Which is still crazy hot. But yeah, 200, 210, I've seen it. I took a photo. I sent it to Kyle. I'm like, dude, this is hot. And yeah, I do some training in there just to like get the body used to the hot fumes, the hot air, the feeling, like you said, your brain saying, get out of here, go to somewhere cold. You know, and you have to fight that. And people don't get, like, yeah, go-karts. I drove, I think, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. My ribs are still purple and blue.
Yeah.
Like, people don't get that. You don't get that in a race car. But you don't get the hotness sauna feeling in a go-kart either. It's always nice and cold. Yeah, it's hot outside, but when you drive, even if it's 150 degrees outside, let's say 100 because it never gets to 150, if it's 100 degrees outside middle of the summer, when you're driving, it's not hot,
right?
It's when you stop, it gets hot because you got the air hitting you, you know, you don't use it, the air hits you straight to the neck, so it doesn't feel that hot. But in a car, if it's 100 degrees outside plus the temperature of the car, that's the worst conditions in the world. I'd rather do a go-kart race all day long then that hotness that you can't control how much you're burning. Like it's that stint. So I did a double this to start Sebring with cooling with water. It's no problem.
Right.
The 2 hour over 2 hours in the car. That was hot. I came out of the car, literally dehydrated like all drivers. Drink some water, drink some Gatorade, I was good to go. I did a single after Kyle jumped out. I almost died because I didn't drink water.
Yeah,
because I swear to God, I didn't drink water. I couldn't drink it. It was so disgusting, the flavor. So I felt 10 times worse for 58 minutes in a car without water that 2 hours with water.
Right.
And that's what people don't get. That is just your body starving itself and asking for help. So in go-karts, you don't get that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and then, you know, on the flip of the coin is I never raced any shifter kart stuff, and I got actually I think it was, well, a buddy of Daryl's put me in his shifter kart for the last race of the season this year, and thank God it rained because I would have been dead otherwise. But like just how physical that is. Like I'm having to crack my visor because I'm fogging up because I'm breathing so hard, which never happens in a race car.
No, for sure. The physicality of a shifter is no. You run out of air, like you run out of oxygen. Your body, your muscles are just destroyed. In a car, you barely run out of air. It's impossible. It'd be really hard, at least in a GT car. It's not physical. It's just hot.
Right.
That's all it is. It's hot. And a go-kart is it's so physical. Your body, your forearms, your neck, your ribs, your abs, your legs, everything is just working. And you're the suspension, and the KZ is so bloody fast, especially on a sticky tire, that it's just like it kills you. It seriously like kills you.
So is the plan for you, do you have like a 5-year plan going forward as far as the career goes? I mean, I assume that you're going to race go-karts until you get told you can't anymore.
Yeah, or till I'm slow.
Yeah.
Luckily, like I said, I make a good living out of it. So it's an income that helps pay a lot of the bills. So for sure, I want to stay doing it as much as I can. And career plan, stay in GT racing. Hopefully, get a maybe, possibly a chance in GTP, a test. As those cars, I've heard from a lot of my teammates in WTR that it's just like a big GT car with
Okay.
a little bit of downforce. So that would be cool to maybe get a test with our team. We have one of the best programs in the world
For
of the
sure.
ladder system, and we have one of the fastest GTP cars in the world. So maybe a test there. That'd be the 5-year plan. Stay doing this as long as I can in GT. Luckily, if everything goes well, you could have a very long career. I'm just getting mine started a little bit later than other people, but I'm very grateful and lucky to be where I am now. And yeah, I don't want to ever let it go.
Yeah, for sure. I've been playing around with this question for race car drivers, and I think everyone's given me a different answer so far. If you were able to elevate any series, like any form of motorsports, to the level that F1 is at, what would it be? What does the world need to see?
What do you like
Like
I
as
like
far as
what
how visible it is, whatever. There's 100 million viewers per race in Formula One.
okay
It could be dirt go-karts, it could be V8 supercars, it could be, super gnats, whatever you think. Like the world needs to see, hey man, this is good racing.
so I would say a sprint race of GT, like of IMSA, a sprint race like at Long Beach next race, a 100 minute race, so 1 hour and 40 minutes. That's crazy because it's one pit stop and flat out to the end. And I would say Super Nats. That final, it actually got, I think, like over 5 million views. This my win this year at Super Nats. Well, last year, the celebration, the emotion of winning that race. Yeah, it's a huge video, a huge hit. One of the I think the second most viewed karting video in the world, in
Wow.
the history of karting, of live streams. So I think those two are like people like F1 because, like, I love F1. I've been watching since I can remember. It's not exciting. Whoever thinks that's exciting doesn't know about racing. There's some races that are exciting. Vegas last year was sick,
Yep. Yep.
50 passes. IndyCar, 100 times more exciting to watch. 150,000 more exciting. But my opinion, the broadcast of F1 is another level.
Sure.
If they did the broadcast of F1 to IndyCar, I think it would be bigger. Because you got the characters, you got the fast drivers, you got the fast cars. Yeah, okay. A Formula One around a street track would destroy an IndyCar. Cool. People don't know that. The TV still looks fast as hell.
Yeah, it's all
So that
relative.
doesn't exactly, it doesn't matter. You're comparing IndyCar to IndyCar. The passing. It's like racing go-karts in IndyCar. Those cars are so raceable. You could follow right behind. There's 10 teams that can win. In F1, there's two teams that can win. And right now, there's only one team and one driver that can win. So it's like, I love F1 and I watch it every single day. I woke up this morning and watched FP1 and FP2 because they're in Australia. I'm not going to stay up. I'm not that big of a
Yeah.
fan. So I watch it. I love it, but it's not as exciting as IMSA for me or IndyCar. And karting, there is some races that, yeah, they're fun to watch, but not, it's just a normal race car track. But Supernats, the pro finals, so no, KZ final and the X30 pro finals are like you can't, I don't miss it. Like, it's crazy. It's like the World Cup of soccer.
Yep.
When the World Cup of soccer comes, I watch Ghana against Albania. I watch anything. Like, I don't care. It's just the World Cup. You watch every single match. It's the same thing at, in these races, in my opinion. The sprint races in IMSA, IndyCar, road courses. I don't like ovals that much. I'm not just a big fan of ovals. I'm not a huge fan. People like ovals. I don't like ovals. And I think if those got some crazy media attention, it would explode because the only thing with karting is like, hey, you're a karter. Yeah, I am. Oh, cool. We should go race. I'll beat you. I'm like, okay. That's the thing with karting. It's such a misguided sport because you could have, go anywhere and drive a go-kart that goes 10 miles an hour, not a go-kart that could beat a Ferrari off the line. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just a difficult thing to get people to understand until they watch and they're like, holy cow, these things are hauling butt. The racing is insane. They're fighting for $15,000 and a title, like I said, almost a world championship, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Before I let you go, I want to ask you a piece of advice. I ask everyone a piece of advice, and I think there's probably no one better to ask than, what advice do you have for a kid in karting who's quick and loves it, but is like clearly doesn't have the family money to go as high as he wants in a car? What advice do you have for him as far as making a living in the go-kart industry as a driver or just in the industry?
Say hello to everyone. Smile to everyone. If something goes wrong, don't show your emotion until you get out and but you are yourself. People really see that. You could be sometimes the fastest guy. I know of some guys that are fast that no one likes them, and there nothing happens. So yes, be nice to everyone. Keep on working, and never give up because you never know. You really never know who's watching. Like I said, the Supernats had a million views. Who could be watching that? Could be Roger Penske could be watching that just because he can. When you have a broadcast of that many people around the world, and it's obviously based around racing because it's a million viewers, and I guarantee you, 700,000 of them have something to do with racing. Like, they like NASCAR, they like this because YouTube's not just going to throw you a random go-kart video if you're watching a cooking video. So you always have to give your best. And if you do something wrong, apologize. Don't be like, oh, next time I'll see him, I'll say sorry. Go to that team that you did something wrong with. Go to that driver, apologize, and keep on working and keep on winning. And if you win, winners get noticed. It's very hard to say that because even in karting nowadays, it's hard to win if you're not a big team just because of, coaching, motors, chassis, data with other drivers. It's hard. It's hard to just like old school, like put the go-kart in the pickup truck and go win a big national event. It's not easy how it used to be. It never was easy, but it used to be possible. Now it's very hard. So that's my advice, is just be a well-rounded person, respectful with everyone, and you just do your talking on the track.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks, Danny. Appreciate you coming on,
Nope.
man.
Thanks, man. It was fun.
See you guys next week.